In a so-called free state, officials and stakeholders concoct solutions to problems often created by other bureaucrats and with little regard for infringements on the people. These stories are born at the apex of freedom and entrepreneurship. We foolishly advocate for the taxpayer. Brian's Beat presents Freedom Fools.
Gonna do to make it small. Your move.
Carla Howell with that song. She put it out. I think it was released a couple of weeks ago. Glad to have it here. Hour three of Freedom Fools on WBSM. I am the fool. I'm Brian. Glad to have you with us. She talked about government way, way too big. How do you make it small? Well, you got to minimize it. One of the things that I like about President Trump, there are not too many, but he would like to abolish the Department of Education. I wish that he would get to doing it. I wish he would get Congress to sit down and make that a real thing. That stated, that's just slicing the federal government, but it's in within the cities and towns, county, where a lot of stuff goes on dealing with education, and of course, right here in the Commonwealth. What I'm going to talk about during this hour, or a good portion of it, is a Supreme Court ruling that came down on yesterday, upholding parents' rights to withhold their kids, to opt their kids out of certain aspects of education that they deem questionable. At issue was what was going on in Montgomery County in Maryland, which actually borders Washington, D.C. They had these storybooks with, let's just say, questionable material in it. One book taught that doctors merely guess at a baby's sex at birth. Another encourages preschoolers to find images such as drag queens, underwear, and leather at a pride parade. Again, I haven't even gotten to that, so maybe I should tell you that these particular storybooks are for 3- and 4-year-olds. Now, before you drop that beer and say, what the, you know what, hold tight. Supreme Court heard you. Supreme Court made a ruling. Part of the problem with what was going on in Montgomery County, and I do say what was going on in Montgomery County, is that they took parental opt-out for the 3- and 4-year-olds. If you were older, you know, you go figure this one out. If you were older, you could opt them out, but you could not opt your 3- or 4-year-old. I would have been yanking my kid out of that school so fast, the door wouldn't be able to hit me from behind. But at any rate, just think about that. Content celebrating gender transitions. Content celebrating same-sex attraction. I'm not against that stuff, but I would want the option of whether or not my son, my daughter, whatever the case may be, would be there digesting that information. Personally, I don't think it belongs in school, but that's a personal opinion. As long as I can opt out. But here's what kind of puzzles Brian. You can opt out now. But why wasn't it set up so the child, the family, could opt in? Why is this type of education deemed so important? So important that you have to let 3- and 4-year-olds know about this stuff. But you're not making sure the kid knows enough about 1, 2, 3 and ABC. Can anybody explain that to me? Maybe Michael King can do so. Michael's going to join us when we come back. He is one of the leaders of the Massachusetts Family Institute. He's going to join us when we come back on Freedom Fools. Well, the big government story, or one of the big government stories that came out yesterday, the Supreme Court upholding parental and religious rights when it comes to what goes on in school. And to talk to us about it is the Massachusetts Family Institute's Michael King. Michael has been with us several times. Glad to have him back on the program today. Michael, this has to be great news for you and the MFI.
Yeah, Brian, we couldn't be more happy about it. It really is a pro-parental rights decision. You could call it a pro-choice decision, but parents have the absolute right to decide what their kids are learning at school, especially when it comes to these issues of sexuality. So we are expecting a 6-3 decision, and that's what we got yesterday.
So does that pertain to schools here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts? Or is this, you know, an order? I know the Supreme Court issued it, but does that only pertain to what's going on in Maryland?
No, this is across the country. So, you know, you're probably aware of the movement in Worcester, Massachusetts, where a couple of years ago we had 4,000 students, almost 20% of the second largest school system in New England, opted out of sex ed. And so there is definitely a big appetite in Massachusetts for parents that are seeing what their kids are learning, wanting to get out of sex ed that they think is not age appropriate and not medically accurate, and they have every right to do so.
I understand that, and I totally agree with it. But my question was more, did the Supreme Court make a sweeping ruling that is good for across the land, or does it only pertain to Montgomery County?
No, it's a sweeping decision across the country, and it also clarifies gender curriculum. So we were getting messaging from many schools. Parents were contacting us and saying, "Hey, I don't want to just get out of the sexual orientation curriculum. I want to get out of the gender identity curriculum." And the schools were saying gender identity, if you can believe it, is not sex ed, which is just crazy.
What is
so
it?
So now we have a, what's that?
What is it?
If it's
not sex ed, what is gender identity? I don't know.
It's a subject that they want every student to know about and learn and really be, you know, dictators about making sure that every student, you know, is exposed to this kind of ideology. And the Supreme Court said no, that parents have every right to decide what their kids learn at school. So it clarified gender ideology as sex ed, and then it also clarified these books, because a lot of times these books are read outside of sex ed class. And so then again, the school would say, "Oh, well, this is not sex ed because we're reading this book during English," or, you know, whatever it might be. So as long as that's has sexual content in it, you know, that the parent disagrees with, no matter what subject it's in, they have every right to opt out. And we want to definitely let parents know in Massachusetts that we want to be your first call when it comes to you wanting to opt out. And if the school denies that, we want to be your first call to protect your First Amendment rights.
Have you read any of these books on the list? I think the I think it was Justice Alito added an addendum, and he had a few of the books that the justices read. And he added, you know, just to, you know, to fortify the ruling that came down.
Yeah, I mean, we've looked through the books, you know, Gender Queer is probably one of the worst of them. But any book that really, you know, is going to define that there's more than two genders, for example, is really, you know, what these Supreme Court justices are talking about. And I just want to stress again that, you know, we were having a huge issue with these books because many parents were wanting to opt out of that. And schools were saying that you can't because it's not considered sex ed. So, you know, these books are absolutely pornographic. And, you know, the other three justices were trying to make it seem like, you know, oh, these are just normal books and, you know, every kid should get exposed to every way of life. No, these books are pornography and do not belong in our schools or our school libraries.
Well, I'm going to take my libertarian stance, I guess. If you want to have them there, so be it. I don't necessarily want my kids reading it. But my bigger point here would be, so now you can opt out. I think that you should have to opt in instead of you have to opt out. Because what happens if you don't know what book is there? And your kids are, you know, force-fed this. You know, it's too late once they've already read it, right?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, Brian, and we'd be pushing for an opt-in. That's absolutely what we would prefer. There's actually a school committee in Dayton-Rehoboth that passed that policy about a year ago to opt in to sex ed. And I think a lot of school committees are afraid of the opt-in because it'll truly expose just how many parents are interested in this kind of sex ed, which I guarantee you is a very small number. So I think that's part of the reason these school committees are like, no, we don't want an opt-in. We just want every kid to get in there because we know that most parents, you know, they're not going to pay super close attention and take the time to fill out and opt out. So we're very pleased by this, and we hope more parents, you know, become more and more aware and really stand up for their parental rights and their kids' innocence.
Michael King with the Massachusetts Family Institute. So let's go back to the opt-in. Is that something, at least on the state level, that we can try to push for? I don't know if you get the legislature, because I don't trust DESE to come up with a sweeping policy, or do you have to fight it at each individual city or town?
Yeah, it's got to be done at the local level. I mean, Dayton-Rehoboth passed a safety in women's sports policy about a year ago, tried to get that passed at the state level, and you know, they pulled some shenanigans you know, during the budget process to, you know, quote unquote send it to study, making it seem like, oh, we're going to take a look at this. And we all know that that's just a way of saying, you know, we don't want this, but also we don't want it to make look like we just voted no on this. We just want to say, oh, we'll look at it more. So look, if we can't pass a safety in women's sports policy at the state level, how much harder is it going to be to pass an opt-in the sex ed policy? Everything's got to be done, at least at this point, on a local level, on the school committee. And MFI definitely wants to be your first call to help you write that policy and help you get that passed.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, and I'm like that. I'll fight it at the local level first. I'm also questioning a lot of things that happen in local politics as well, even as a town meeting member. So my last resort would be right up your alley here. And that's got to be the private independent type school, whether you're religious or non-religious.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Everything's got to be done at the local level. Look, I mean, we have out of 160 state representatives, there's what, 25 Republicans. And out of 40 state senators, there's, what, maybe 5 Republicans in the state Senate. So we are definitely a one-party state at the state house. And, you know, stuff like this is incredibly difficult to get passed at the state level. So having said that, we've had a ton of success at the local level, and that's where we'll continue to push until things can change at the state level.
So my guess is, and for those that don't know, Michael King has taken a seed And he has blossomed this. I mean, this thing has flowered, an educational flower, Michael, where you've been able to start a lot of micro schools all across the Commonwealth. And I applaud you for that. But I'm hoping that some of these books that I'm reading about, like Jacob's Room to Choose, and you know, some of these other books aren't a part of your curriculum.
No, for sure they're not. I mean, this is the exact reason that parents are making a choice to get out of the public schools. There was an article in the Worcester Gazette that said 1,000 kids, a couple of years ago, 1,000 kids left the Worcester public schools. So we have a public school exit going on, not just in Massachusetts, but across the nation. We have 13 states now that have universal education school choice, which is phenomenal. New Hampshire, just about a week ago, went to universal school choice. So anyone that moves to New Hampshire, it's almost $5,000 per kid, no matter what you make. So it's great to see this movement, more and more kids getting out of these government schools. And, you know, look, we expose the problem. We have this great opt-out movement. But to what you're saying, we said we can't just expose the problem. We got to have a solution. So now we have 24 what we call church-based learning centers serving kids, you know, upwards of 5 days a week for as low as $100 a month. And we just think the church is the perfect partner because they have available and affordable space during the week, and they have built-in networks of many times retired teachers that are looking for an opportunity to minister in this very unique way. So we're very excited about that movement. We think it's only going to grow.
So I think last year at this time, maybe a year and a half ago, you were talking about 12 or 13. You've got 24 now.
Yeah, it's doubled. Anyone that's listening to the show right now and wants to know more about these learning centers, there's actually a ton of them on the South Shore. I think that's where we have the most. You can text the word school option. It's all one word, school option, to our short code 87891.
And actually, I know the code because I think it's in my phone. I think I hear from you all the time. But that stated, excuse me, Michael. What's, you know, people always say, well, how do we know that they're still getting a good education?
Yeah, well, look, I think first, when we look at what parents are looking for today, you know, academics is very important, and these church-based learning centers are doing a great job with that. But it's also things like safety. It's things like morality. And so, you know, these are a great space for that. And we already hear the testimonies of kids. I mean, we've been doing this now for 3 or 4 years. We already hear the testimonies of kids that couldn't read and are now reading at grade level. I mean, look, in our public schools, I think it's like 50% literacy rate in many of our grades. Academic performance is a major concern in the public schools, and these church-based learning centers are doing a phenomenal job. And I'm sure you're familiar with the Big Beautiful Bill. We are praying, we are hoping that the Educational Choice for Children Act gets reinstated in the Big Beautiful Bill. We'll probably know by the end of this weekend, and that will mean educational choice for Massachusetts residents. So we're super excited about that. If anybody wants more information on that, you can text the acronym ECCA, Educational Choice for Children Act, ECCA, to 87891.
So what would it mean for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts if the thing up in New Hampshire, where they're giving, where's the money coming from in order for that education to work, that choice education to work?
Yeah, so that is the state dollars, I believe, that would have gone to that child should they have gone to the public school. So basically, you know, it's not the federal dollars, it's the state dollars, so which are, you know, a little less. So it's almost $5,000, and, you know, it makes sense. I mean, if you're not going to go to the public school, why should you pay for it? So at least you get your state dollars back. And it's probably one of the best-run education freedom accounts in the nation. And I would encourage more and more people to learn about it. And wouldn't it be great to have something like that in Massachusetts?
I think it would. I always do. I question if there are any strings attached. Would you know?
Yeah. So this is a tax right, or this is a this is money that's going directly from taxpayers to a scholarship granting organization. So it's not even going through the Treasury. It doesn't go at all to the IRS. If you owe $10,000 at the end of the year for taxes, I believe you get to write off 10% of that. So you write a check for $1,000 to your local scholarship granting organization. In our case, it would be the Children's Scholarship Fund. And they can then allocate that money toward a church-based learning center, toward a private school, anything really outside of the public school. So it's really just taking your tax dollars, and instead of paying Uncle Sam, you're going to pay a percentage of those to a scholarship-granting organization.
I like what you just said, but now I've got to trump that. I hope I'm not trumping it, but do you trust our legislature?
So our legislature will have nothing to do with it. If indeed it passes as is, you know, but they are, you know, as you would imagine at the federal level, last minute shenanigans with this piece of legislation. So we have yet to see how it's going to end up perhaps passing. So, but yeah, I mean, if it passes in its original form, you know, hands off Massachusetts legislature. This is really just individual tax, and these are federal tax dollars going into a scholarship-granting organization. So I don't really think the state can really do much about it if this ECCA stays in its original form.
All right, but I'm thinking the New Hampshire Act that's going right now, would we, could we get something that might be a voter referendum? I don't know, but it sounds like something that we might want here. And then I'm coming back, but do we really trust the legislature? We can't get an audit of the damn legislature.
Oh yeah. Well, look, if you're trying to get what's going on in New Hampshire with the current state of the state legislature, forget about it. They're controlled by the school unions. You know, you're gonna have to change the makeup of your legislators. But look, I mean, if that could be done in Massachusetts, and you know, the incentive would be to get some kind of universal school choice like New Hampshire has. But look, every family's gonna, you know, be tempted to move to New Hampshire. It's the only New England state that has anything like this.
Sounds good, Michael King. I want to thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure, Brian. It's always a pleasure. You're doing a great job, and thanks for the opportunity to spread the word.
No problem, man. Have a great one.
You too.
Michael King with the Massachusetts Family Institute joining us. Man, let me just read a little of some of this stuff. And look, I question voucher type programs. Not that I don't think vouchers are good. I think they're stupendous. I question the string or strings that might be attached. You know how it is. It's kind of like the drug dealer. They'll give you a little taste of the coke or a little taste of the heroin, and they'll give it to you for free. Then you come back for the second. Next thing you know, they're charging you. Next thing you know, you're hooked, and you always got to pay. And who knows how desperate you're going to get at that particular time. Well, look how many people are complaining right now because the federal government is thinking about cutting Medicaid funding and cutting certain other programs because they've become so reliant on them. The government, I like to say, the government can give it, the government can take it away. Now, the New Hampshire government, I have a little more faith in because they are a small government. Here in the Commonwealth, I can only shake my head in dismay. 508-996-0500 is how you get onto the program today. Here's one of the books. Intersection Allies. We Make Room for All by Chelsea Johnson and others. It's for preschoolers to grade 4. A cheerful, diverse cast of friends describes living the alley life in this progressive picture book. Told in simple rhyming text, the book shares the stories of each child in the group. That doesn't sound too bad. Kate identifies as non-binary. again, this is for preschool to grade four. So at best, you might be 9 or 10 at the oldest, 3 or 4 at the youngest. Let's see. Kate identifies as non-binary. Her friends make sure she feels safe in all spaces, including school bathrooms. Nia's family marches in a Black Lives Matter protest. All her friends join in solidarity. The Dakota Access Pipeline protests are also highlighted by, again, schools, in my definition, which may not be your definition, and that's okay. But schools, in Brian's definition, are to teach you how to learn, not necessarily what to learn. This is an indoctrination of a different type. And I got to tell you, some of the stuff that I'm hearing from the Trump administration is a different type of indoctrination, is a different type of this is what you should learn or what you should not learn. That should be up to the family, and therefore a bigger reason to leave the government school system and to opt, as I like to say, for something better. 508-996-0500. Okay. Jacob's Room to Choose by Sarah Hoffman and Ian Hoffman, preschool to grade two. So this couldn't be as bad as Intersection Allies, or could it? Let's see. In this follow-up to Jacob's new dress. Okay. I take back what I said earlier. In this follow-up to Jacob's new dress, Jacob and Sophie try to use the bathroom at school, but do not feel safe. Jacob, a boy who wears dresses, is threatened by several kids in the boys' restroom, while Sophie, a girl who dresses in a plaid button-down and khakis, is chased out of the girls' restroom. When they explain what happened to their teacher, the woman gathers their class for a lesson. Not everyone looks like the same signs for boys and girls, but everyone has to pee. Look, I can understand why parents want to opt out of stuff like that. Again, I guess it might be the teacher's place to explain that everybody has to pee, but not how to pee. Here's another one. This book's called My Rainbow by Deshauna Neal and Trinity Neal. Preschool to grade two. A lively own voices picture book tribute to a family's unwavering support of their transgender daughter. Written by a mother-daughter advocate duo. Again, if parents want their kids reading books like this, here are a couple of options. The library, and that could be the school library. Or opt your child in to read that material in school, but it's got to be opt-in, not opt-out. Because if it's opt-out, how do you know that the school is going to let parents know what the material is? In fact, haven't we run into that before? I mean, to say that some of this material is questionable. Here's another one. Pride Puppy. For preschool to grade two. By Robin Stevenson. This colorful alphabet story begins with the family waking up, preparing for the day, and dressing in their pride best. Head to toe in rainbow colors. As the alphabet advances, each letter represents everything from intersectional flags to a queen in a beauty dress, a beautiful dress. As a joyful parade glides through town, parade goers gleefully display signs with messages of gender equality, peace, love, and respect. So, I'm reading this stuff to you. Do you want the teacher reading this stuff to the preschoolers? And maybe by grade two, the kids can read it on their own? What Are Your Words? A Book About Pronouns by Catherine Locke. Preschool to third grade. Ari's uncle Lior comes to visit, and the pair walks through town to a neighborhood summer bash. Uncle Lior uses them, they pronouns, and they make a habit of always asking Ari, "What are your words?" Sometimes Ari knows which pronouns feel just right, but on this day, it's tricky to decide. On the way to the bash, Ari introduces Uncle Lior to everyone in town using that person's pronouns, which are illustrated over their head, along with a few words describing their personality. And if I can take this back an hour or so, you're wondering why the kid from the Chinese school is getting accepted at college. I'm taking a guess here. Pretty sweeping guess here. That in the Chinese schools, they're worried a little bit more about mathematics. Maybe the different dialects of Chinese, Mandarin, Sichuan, you know, that kind of stuff. They might be learning engineering skills. They might be learning how to fly. And I don't mean a kite. I'm talking about aeronautics. They might be learning about history. In fact, I'm sure they're learning about Chinese history from 1945 to present. But some of this other stuff, it's over the top. Wouldn't you agree? I think it's shameful. It makes me wonder, how did school committees, superintendents of school, the people that choose the books for each school district, elementary, middle, and high school, how they got their jobs? This is, it's putrid. It makes me want to gag. That stated, if you as a parent, guardian, grandparent, if you're okay with the material, so be it. But let's not force families that have, whether, and it doesn't, to me, it doesn't matter if there's a religious abhorrence to it. It matters that you don't want it. All right? You don't want your kid learning that. Why should your tax dollars fund something that you don't want your kids to learn? Can anybody explain that to me? Here we are, 2025. We see more and more. It's in trickles. It's in drabs. But since the crisis called pandemic, more and more kids have been leaving the system, as Michael King expressed a year and a half ago. His religious or church-based schools, there were 12, 13, 14 of them. There are 24 now throughout the Commonwealth. And that network is growing. Now, I'm not big on religion, but there are also independent schools or non-religious schools out there doing something similar. So there is something for just about everyone. And I don't know, maybe we started in Dartmouth. Maybe the folks in New Bedford try to get the ball rolling in the city of New Bedford, where you are working to, A, eliminate some of these junk books. Chris Carter, I don't know if you're listening today or not. I don't know how many of these books that I've been reading today are on the book list in the city of New Bedford. But I think that many parents, if they knew that these books, that their tax dollars were paying for these books, they would be in an uproar. Mayor Mitchell, how many of these types of books did you read on your way to Harvard? If you're the superintendent of schools, how many of these books did you read on your way to college? College graduates sitting right here talking to you. Never once did a book like this come across my desk. Never once did we have to read anything akin to this. Now, was there some trash that we had to read? Sure. The Midnight Ride of Paul Revere. It never explained that Paul fell off the horse. But, I mean, it wasn't gender explicit. And the other thing, Michael King brought this up. How is it that gender identity isn't a part of sex education? Who in the hell ever thought that they could get away with saying something like that? And I mean, really get away with it. Really? Gender identity isn't sex education? Let me stop. In the remaining minutes that we have, if there's someone who can tell me, and I'll listen, I promise, if you can explain to me why gender identity is not sex education, I have taken the wax out of my ears, and I'm willing to listen. 508-996-0500. I don't know that you can do it, but I'm willing to listen if you can. A lot of this is just trash. And congratulations to the parents in Montgomery County, Maryland, for making the move that they did to actually take this to court and fight all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. Now, they had help. They had other groups that do legal battles, jump on board. But you got to start. And I would like to see that kind of run happen here in the Commonwealth. First things first, let's find out what materials are floating around in the school. And let me applaud the folks over in the old Rochester regional community, those schools of Marion, Mattapoisett, and Rochester, because they have been fighting like the Dickens to get a lot of these crappy books out of the school. You paid the money for the books. You might as well leave them in the school, but have an opt-in if you want your kids to read that material. And I know that most of the parents that I communicate with from that area, they don't want it at all. But the books are there. And I guess you can keep on trying to fight to get the books out. It might work. But in case it doesn't, work for an opt-in instead of the opt-out. Because as you can see, you can opt out all you want, but there is always going to be the weasel out there, the weasel superintendent of schools, the weasels on the school committee that will work. They'll get an attorney to write it up to make sure that your kid is going to see that material. 508-996-0500. Thank you. Hello. Yes. Okay, well, I give you an A for effort for trying to get in. I know it's been a very difficult task for you. But I come back and I'm pretty strong on this, pretty vehement about it. Next thing you know, all the kids will have to read this, and this will be on the next uniform MCAS. I can't believe that they actually have this material out there. Hello.
Hi, Brian.
Hi, Brian.
So I wanted to just share this since we're talking about this. My sister, who lives out, you know, in California near in Berkeley, she's got a granddaughter who's going to be 3 in August. So she's still in her 2s. And she sent me a picture of her dressed up for Pride Day in her preschool, or in her nursery school.
Really?
Pride Day.
Pride school and nursery school, huh?
I mean, what?
Well, I mean, that's Berkeley. I mean, that is Berkeley.
Yeah, right. It is Berkeley. But it's like, well, what are you telling them Pride about at 2 or 3 years old? Pride in what? A rainbow? Like, they don't know. But she was all dressed up in rainbow Pride outfit. I was like, what are we going to do?
It's a lost cause. Hey, thank you for your call. I'm going to try to get a couple of more in. Thank you.
Okay.
Hello.
Good afternoon, Brian. How are you?
I am. Got to make it quick, though.
Okay, Brian. It's like quickly. It's the whole thing about the citizenship. I mean, we're only one of 30 countries in the world that actually does that. And that was intended for slaves who were brought here against their will. So there are people taking advantage of that. And I really believe you cannot make a law. You can't make a lawful act that's not an unlawful lawful. And a lot of people, they use it to their advantage. I see it every day. All these young women getting pregnant, coming in 20, 19, 18 years old, here for a couple of months, boom, pregnant. So I disagree with you there. I think there has to be a way. We have to find a way to do this, because if we don't take away the carrot, they're going to keep on using it. So we're only one of 30 countries in the world. So all the other countries don't do what we do. And it was intended for that. So I'm hoping that the Supreme Court really does the interpretation the right way, because that was meant for people brought here against their will, not people taking advantage of
it. So that came out in 1868.
Yes, sir.
Slavery stopped. Yes, sir. Importation of slavery stopped in 1807.
It was for the children. It was for the children, because the white people, who were very racist, were saying that their children weren't American citizens because they didn't want them to vote. And they were, because their parents were brought here against their will. So that's a no-brainer. These people aren't brought here against their will. These people are using the system, and the system is hurting regular Americans between housing, medical. The numbers are the numbers. The reason why housing costs are crazy in this country, when you open the border in 1 year, in 4 years, to 10 million people plus, as we know, they say 10 million, there's probably more, all the gotaways. Then we have states like our state giving 2 years of free rent. Well, I have friends of mine who are shacking up 3-4 to an apartment because they can't afford it. And we got a governor who's supposed to represent American citizens giving 2 years free rent to illegal aliens who broke the rules. You think that's right, Brian? I don't.
Well, you know what? I don't think it's right, but those are two entirely different things. We'll see what the Supreme Court does. I do appreciate your call, and I got to wrap this up. So thank you. I'm sorry I'm not going to be able to get to any other callers. Well, it's time for me to pack my bags and get on out the door. I'm going to try to my best to find out about some of these book titles. I've been texting back and forth with school committee member Chris Cotter, and he will, I'll give him a few titles and he'll check to see if they're on the list in the New Bedford schools. We'll find out, as they say, when we find out. I'm back on Monday, 6 o'clock, for Brian's Beat. You have yourself an excellent weekend. Stay dry. 73 in Dartmouth, 69 in Rochester, 73 in New Bedford. Time for me to pack up the bags and get on out the door. Enjoy. Adios.
Traveling around from town to town, sometimes I think I'll settle down, but I know I'd hunger to be free. life for me. Adrifting, the world is my friend. I'm traveling along the road.